from KUT and KUTX Studios.
This is you.
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the last weekend of October 2019. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. Austin's Proposition A. You can vote on it now, but even those who forced it on the ballot do not support it anymore.
But we can't get it off the ballot because once it's put on, you can't take it off.
The Speaker of the Texas House chooses not to seek re-election after a secret recording was made public.
He's also going to be the first one-term speaker that Texas has had since Price Daniel Jr. in 1975.
And a local museum that preserves Austin's musical history opens in a brand new home.
And we think it's really important for people to learn what evolved that made Austin the place it is.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend. Our fall membership drive is underway right now. If you want to support this podcast and all the podcasts and all the news and information you get from KUT, plus all the music on KUTX, please consider becoming our next member by going to KUT.org. And if you do that, it would mean the world to me if you could put in the comments when you join that you joined because of KUT Weekend. It would send a very powerful message to the people upstairs.
When voters go to the poll this November, they're going to find a different kind of voting machine waiting for them, and we want to make sure everybody's comfortable with the way it works.
This is the Travis County Clerk, Dana DeBeauvoir. She's explaining how to use the county's new voting machines.
You're going to be given a blank, long, white card. This is your paper trail. You're going to take it over to the ballot marking device, which is, that's all it does, is it makes marks on your paper trail. There's no memory. There's no hard drive in this system.
This is sound from a video produced by KUT. You can go watch this video on our website, see how to use those voting machines. And while you're at KUT.org, you can read about how to make sure you are registered, what kind of ID you need to bring to vote, what's on the ballot in Travis, Hayes, and Williamson counties, all on our website. Now, one of the items on the ballot is City of Austin Proposition A. Not to be confused with Travis County Proposition A. Totally different. City of Austin Proposition A began as a way to stop the building of the new Major League Soccer stadium in North Austin. They failed to do that, and it's become an ordinance that many do not want to pass. Not even the political action committee that started the petition in the first place. As KUT's Jimmy Moss tells us, if this passes, it would mean significant changes for Austin nonprofits.
If, as you're listening to this story, you think to yourself, this sounds one-sided and a bit complicated, it's because it kind of is. Wait, let me explain. Proposition A began with the financial backing of one soccer team owner, Bobby Epstein, and his Austin Bold, hoping to stop another soccer team owner, Anthony Precourt, and his Austin FC, from moving into the city. A PAC, Fair Play Austin, was created to collect signatures which were turned into the city, calling for an ordinance to limit how city land is used. However, the petition was too late to stop the stadium construction, its intended target. But the petition moved on to the city council, which had the choice of either adopting it as law or letting voters decide. The city council opted to let the voters take a swing. Then in August, just after council approved ballot language for Prop A, the PAC that collected the signatures folded. Fair Play Austin issued a statement saying, in its current condition, passing Proposition A would do more harm than the good intended when we initially supported it. Going on to say, Fair Play Austin PAC will not undertake any effort to support the passage of Proposition A.
Austin Mayor Steve Adler.
Now we're stuck with this petition that's on the ballot that even the people that were supporting it initially are no longer supporting it or working for it. But we can't get it off the ballot because once it's put on, you can't take it off.
So just what will you see on the ballot? This.
Shall a city ordinance be adopted that requires that a sale, lease, conveyance, mortgage, or other alienation of city-owned land for any existing or future youth, recreational or professional sports facility, or any existing...
She goes on for a while. Facility. As a result of the ballot language, there are loads of unintended consequences. Nonprofits and youth sports could bear the brunt of them. The city would not be able to lease city property for an entertainment or sports venue at any level without a vote by the community.
Which means every time we were going to lease fields to Little League, there needs to be a popular vote in order to be able to get that done.
The ordinance also would require leases to receive the approval by a supermajority of the city council, 9 of 11 members.
Because it's a poorly drafted ordinance that backs up the petition, I don't think anybody really knows the full extent of the harm that it's going to cause.
Passing the ordinance would also come with a financial cost. Elections for lease renewals to youth sports and theater nonprofits will come at taxpayer expense. The city would have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for an election to approve a golf course vendor, kids' soccer groups, or performing arts organizations. The more immediate concern for local nonprofits, if it passes, is the tax bill that will come due at the end of the year.
Those nonprofits have to pay money to the city equivalent to what would be property taxes. That's going to increase the bill for the Long Center by like $2.5 million a year. They don't have $2.5 million a year, the Long Center.
If it does pass, our estimated taxes for 2019, I think, is just over $87,000. So that would be a significant number that would impact our budget. Expenses such as that would require huge changes in the way that we operate.
Renelle Bedell, Associate Managing Director at Zach Theater, says that would impact their programs.
Some of the things that it could include, you know, shows with smaller casts, shows with less technical needs. We could have to decrease the number of scholarships we're offering to not only our students, but the schools that come here to see shows during the day.
The North Austin YMCA on Rumberg Lane actually sits on city-owned land. Sean Doles is vice president of the YMCA of Austin. He says that means Prop A would affect them too.
We subsidize the operation of that facility. So if we have to pay an additional $200,000 in taxes, that's going to significantly impact our ability to serve the children and families in that area that need us most.
And none of that includes the amount of money, time, and resources all of these nonprofits have spent to advocate against the proposition. Which brings us to the Major League Soccer team that all of this was intended to stop. Two Oak Ventures has already started construction on the stadium Proposition A was intended to thwart. For now, it does not affect Anthony Precourt or his future team, the Austin FC. But team officials did say they would help pick up the fight. This is Anthony Precourt at the stadium groundbreaking in September.
We don't think Proposition A is good for Austin. It doesn't directly impact us. It does impact folks that we think are good citizens of Austin, so we're against Proposition A.
While it did not commit publicly, city election filings show that Two Oak Ventures contributed $50,000 to Austin Unites, a new PAC trying to stop the proposition from passing.
If the sale, lease, conveyance, mortgage, or other alienation of city-owned land for the facility has not already obtained voter approval,
Jimmy Moss, KUT News,
requires that the facility post payment and performance bonds and pay ad valorem taxes or payments equal to the amount of taxes.
Now, also on the ballot for this election, several school districts in the area asking voters to approve school bonds. KUT's Claire McInerney reports.
Burnett CISD, along with Del Valle, Lockhart, and Manor ISDs, are all pushing multi-million dollar bonds. Burnett is asking for $33 million to renovate schools and add classrooms. Del Valle wants $284 million to complete construction projects at various schools. Lockhart and Manor are both trying to address their rapidly growing school districts. Lockhart ISD says it needs $92 million to increase capacity at current schools and build new ones. Manor is asking for $280 million to also build new schools and increase classrooms. Claire McInerney, KUT News.
A week from today, so next Friday, Texans can start buying health insurance through the marketplace created by the Affordable Care Act. The marketplace was established for people who do not get insurance through their employer or through Medicaid or through Medicare. KUT's Ashley Lopez reports open enrollment at healthcare.gov is 6 weeks long this year.
If you bought health insurance off the Obamacare marketplace last year, this year's options will look pretty similar. Like last year and the year before, there are still the same four insurance providers selling plans here in the Austin area. Those companies are Ambetter, Sendero, Oscar, and Blue Cross Blue Shield. Corey Hadamer is with Foundation Communities, which helps people navigate the Obamacare marketplace website. She says this is a sign the market here is stable.
Consistency and stability is a good thing. It shows that the insurers are committed to continuing to provide plans and that consumers can expect consistency year after year.
Open enrollment begins November 1st this year and ends on December 15th. Prices for various plans are likely to change from last year, so experts encourage people to shop around to find the plan that's best for them. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
How well does the city of Austin help people access mental health services? That was the question city auditors were tasked with answering in a report released this week. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey has the findings.
The question itself was hard to answer. In part, auditors said because the city needs to do a better job of collecting data about who needs mental health services. The city itself does not provide the services, but if staff with Austin's public health or parks departments, for example, comes across someone who needs help, they can refer the person to a local nonprofit. City staff worried that by tracking who gets referred, for example, their race or age, they'd be violating someone's privacy. City Auditor Corey Stokes told council members there are still ways to get an idea of who's accessing mental health services.
So you could track the number of people that needed services, the number of people that needed services by branch or by location without actually tracking who they were.
Improving access to mental health services is one of 10 goals city council members set for the next couple of years. Audrey McGlinchey, KUT News.
The Speaker of the Texas House, Dennis Bonin, says he will not seek re-election in 2020, not in his House district and not as House Speaker. The decision stems from remarks Bonin made in a recording that was made over the summer by conservative activist Michael Quinn Sullivan of Empower Texans. Bonin did not know he was being recorded. In the recording, Bonin asked Sullivan, with help politically targeting some Republican lawmakers in their primaries, and this was after Bonin had stated publicly on the last day of the legislative session that any incumbent who did that would face consequences. KUT's Ben Philpott has been following all of this day by day. Hello, Ben.
Well, now we know what the consequences were.
I guess so, right? I mean, Bonin was elected to the state legislature in 1996, so it's remarkable end to a more than 20-year career in Texas politics.
Right. And he's also going to be the first one-term speaker that Texas has had since Price Daniel Jr. in 1975.
What did Bonin say in the statement he put out this week?
You know, what we have kind of grown accustomed to in political statements. I've thought about it. I've pondered it in my heart. I have prayed on it. And I've now decided that the best thing would be that I'm not going to even run for re-election. We've had that a lot for no controversy in terms of the several congresspeople here in Texas that have announced they're retiring heading into the 2020 election. Some of those you can argue were because they have close races that maybe they don't want to deal with. Others, no, they just decided that it's time to retire. But it was basically the boilerplate. I've pondered it. I've thought about it. And I'm going to step down.
And he's not even seeking re-election in his own district. What does that say about the impact of his comments on that recording?
A lot greater than he expected, maybe, because if he had seen this coming, I would guess that maybe this would have been something to resign over before the tapes had ever been released. Yeah, I mean, he was extremely popular in that district. And the fact that he is now saying that he's not just going to run for speaker, but he's going to resign is pretty big. Although, you know, at the same time, you've been speaker, you've been in charge. Why do you want to hang around if you know you're not going to be speaker again? Tom Craddock, former speaker of the Texas House, has been an example of somebody still staying with the legislature. But the vast majority of them, when their time is done, when they hand over that big gavel with all that power that comes with it, they don't want to hang around.
The audio of this secret recording was released last week. Late in the week, after the recording was released, the Republican caucus had a meeting in Austin. Yep. At what point did this all break down for Speaker Bonin?
Well, I mean, I guess you could say that the initial breakdown is that we found out there may be a tape out there. Up until the tape being released, you had generic, this doesn't sound good. You know, I was able to listen to the tape on the side, and I think that the speaker made some mistakes here, you know, whatever. When the tape was released, then people had things to point to, had things to react to, had things they were forced to react to by either the press or just local people in their district calling the office and saying, what does my elected lawmaker think about this? And then, of course, that caucus meeting you mentioned. You saw things continue to build through that, with the tipping point, at least publicly, appearing to be that late Monday, a group of committee chairs for Speaker Bonin, and these are the inner circle trusted supporters of Speaker Bonin, all came out and said, we can no longer support Speaker Bonin as Speaker.
So what happens now? I mean, he's still Speaker until 2021, right?
Yeah, he is. As long as the legislature doesn't come back, the only thing that could happen is if he steps down from the position. There have been immediate calls from some grassroots activists like Empower Texans, which, you know, got the ball rolling on this thing, to, you know, hey, now is the time, Governor Abbott, to call a special session on this conservative agenda that Empower Texans wants passed. If you had a special session, then somebody can say, well, I'd like to call a vote to vacate the chair, to have a new speaker, and then you might be able to get a new one there. But you're right. Until then, we're sitting and waiting until January of 2021.
KUT's Ben Philpott joining us to talk about Texas House Speaker Dennis Bonin announcing he will not seek re-election as speaker and will not seek re-election as a member of the Texas legislature. He was first elected in 1996. Thank you so much, Ben.
Thank you.
Over 7,000 more Austin homes and businesses are at high risk of flooding, according to updated floodplain maps. That has the city making changes to its building rules. KUT's Mose Bushell reports the nature of those changes is still being worked out as the new rules head to city council.
With the exception of properties near the Colorado River, the overhaul puts most places that used to be in the 500-year floodplain into the 100-year floodplain. That means property owners will have new restrictions on how and what they can build. It also means many will have to get flood insurance. But the proposal will make it easier to permit new building in flood-prone areas. It will also make it easier to build in the 100-year floodplain along the Colorado River, including Lake Austin and parts of Lake Travis. Kevin Shunk is Austin's floodplain administrator.
We're more likely to experience larger storms than we previously thought. And staff's response is this ordinance, which will guide the city towards a more flood-resilient community.
Climatologists say we can expect more flooding rains as greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuels warm the Earth's atmosphere. After these rules get through the Planning Commission, Austin City Council will take them up next month. Mose Bushell, KUT News.
Austin travelers will soon be able to fly nonstop to Paris. KUT's Samuel King reports it's the second new transatlantic destination announced from Austin Bergstrom in a matter of weeks.
Norwegian Airlines will fly seasonal nonstops to Paris beginning in May, and Dutch airline KLM announced last month it would begin service from Austin to Amsterdam next year. Airport spokeswoman Mandy McClendon says both cities are priority destinations for new service, and so the airlines are eligible for incentives.
The fee waivers and incentives that are offered to them are just one way to mitigate all the risks and expense that airlines take when they start service here.
McClendon says no final decisions have been made about the kinds of incentives the airlines will receive. Norwegian already flies from Austin to London Gatwick and recently announced it would add more flights next year on that route. Samuel King, KUT News.
Austin has changed a lot in the last few years, in the last few decades. And we've all heard the concerns that what makes this city cool and attracted so many people here in the first place, music and art specifically, is being priced outside the city limits. But a small local institution is trying to preserve the memory of that, archiving the visual aspects of the city's music culture. I went to visit them a few weeks ago.
We are a nonprofit that collects, preserves, and exhibits Austin music-related art from about 1955 to present day.
This is Leah Meckling. She is the executive director of the South Austin Museum of Popular Culture.
We think it's important to preserve these items so that people can see them and appreciate what came before and what came together to make Austin the city that it is today.
For the past 15 years, the museum had been operating out of a space in the same building as the Planet K on South Lamar Boulevard. But now the museum is dropping the word South from its name and has moved into a brand new space on North Lamar Boulevard.
We need better space to store our collection, better space to display our exhibits. So many people, new people are moving here who really don't know. They've heard that Austin's the live music capital of the world, and they like a lot of things they've heard about Austin, but they don't really know.
We're out on a desert, looking at the burning sun. We're out on a desert, I'm looking at the burning sun.
Like the story of Grey Ghost, he was born in Bastrop in 1903. He died in 1996. There's a marker at the Long Center with his name on it, Roosevelt T. Williams. And at the museum, a striking photograph of Grey Ghost.
Really was one of those unrecognized people for many years. He actually drove a bus for the school system. And it was really hard for him to make a living doing his music, so he did a cornucopia of things. But then later in life, it became really popular. He had a weekly happy hour gig at the Continental Club for a long time.
I'm a traveling hobo, and I go from town to town.
That photo of Grey Ghost was part of an exhibit at the museum of photography by Martha Grennan. She's lived in Austin since the late 70s. She served as an art director for the Austin Chronicle for many years.
What we really like about her photographs is that a lot of them really show the bands in action. There's a lot of movement, so you really feel that energy.
Like this picture she took of Balbora, a punk band from Osaka, Japan, that was here for South by Southwest in 1998.
Here we have the girl singer just leaping up into the air while she's playing the guitar, and the bassist next to her, he looks pretty amused by that in a kind of reserved way.
In their old space on South Lamar, it was getting cramped. Art was hung virtually from the floor to the ceiling in one small area, pieces from their permanent collection.
Like an original painting that Sam Yates did from a photo. We also have a painting of Stevie Ray Vaughan done by Scout Stormcloud. We also have Scott Newton photos of Luann Martin. Posters, of course. There's several original posters. And it's a painting done by Gilbert Shelton and Jim Franklin. It's the Furry Freak Brothers and a lunar landscape peeking over.
What's this, this sculpture, this doll sort of splattered in red paint?
That's an example of our punk art. It was done by Randy Biscuit Turner, who was an artist and musician. He was in the band called The Big Boys. We did a series of ongoing projects where, like for instance, this is a kind of tortured, bloody doll mounted on a painted background, and he did 50 of these, and we put them all up at one time. It really made a big impact. And we hang it up high in hopes that when children come in here, they won't notice it right away, because, you know, like deer, sometimes people don't look up. Children look up every time. They notice it every time.
And of course, as she mentioned, the Austin Museum of Popular Culture has pieces by Austin's granddaddy of poster art, Jim Franklin.
Jim Franklin, who's from Texas, came to Austin in the mid-60s, got involved with the Vulcan Gas Company, which was the first psychedelic club here, and designed a lot of their posters. Gilbert Shelton was the other primary artist, but Jim Franklin certainly was no slacker. and just has such a wild and vivid imagination. He really illustrated a whole generation's sensibilities. Austin has always been a city of change. We have 5 universities here, and so there's a constant influx of young, talented, eager, creative people. And it should be appreciated and encouraged. So how do you do that? I think you look backwards and you learn, and then you know better where you want to go in the future, and you can take Austin to a really great place.
Leah Meckling is the executive director of what is now the Austin Museum of Popular Culture. Used to be the South Austin Museum of Popular Culture, but they're dropping the word South from their name, and they've moved to the building behind Threadgill's old number 1 at 6416 North Lamar Boulevard. The first exhibit in their space is art by Jim Franklin. The opening is Sunday from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. That's KUT Weekend for the last weekend of October 2019. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org, email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org, or just ask me on Twitter. I'm at KUT Nathan. Now, our theme music is by RAC, and I do appreciate you listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org.